recently, former chief executive of the Health and Social Care Board, John Compton, sitting in front of me this morning. Is there anything substantial in this announcement, John, in your view, by Michelle O'Neill around this 31 million? Let's start there.
Well, obviously it's a good thing. First of all, if there's 31 million, any number is a good thing to have because it helps reduce the distress for people who are waiting.
Because the 31 million is not guaranteed. She can't promise it because she's not in a position to promise it.
It's a political thing, isn't it, at this point in time? And of course, that's very difficult given the fact that we don't have a government and an election pending and all of that. I think it is highly probable that 31 million will come through the system. I guess there's been a lot of discussion behind the scenes. I guess even if it's left with the civil servants to administer, they will try to administer, if you like, the intention of the outgoing executive. But there is no guarantee on the 31 million. And the important thing for the system is that it needs that guarantee because it has to plan to spend money. You know, it can't plan to spend money it hasn't got. So it needs to be absolutely crystal clear that it's got the 31 million.
And it can't be crystal clear because you need a government to make it crystal clear.
Well, I guess so. You know, I mean, that's obviously a question for the politicians to answer. But in the normal course of events, governments take the decision about spend of money and then they tell the system to spend the money. In a situation where you don't have a government, there's always a slight degree of ambivalence about whether or not there is really the authority to spend.
And what we seem to have very quickly moved to, John, which shouldn't go past the public, is this £31 million of aspirational money in the short term to start treating patients for who have been waiting a year? The target wasn't a year, not so long ago, was it?
No, the target is quite clear. The target for outpatients is that 50% of people will be seen within 9 weeks. And this is a particular amount of money because that target hasn't been met, and a number of people, just under 40,000 people at the end of September, are waiting over 12 months. And that, you know, that is really, I don't think that should be lost on anyone. That is,
you were about to say what you really thought there.
That's not really a good number. That's a very disappointing number for any system. It can't, no one in the system will have any pleasure in that sort of number at all.
So people should be waiting no longer than 9 weeks?
That's the target, is 50% of people waiting longer than 9 weeks for a first outpatient appointment.
And now the person, the new leader of Sinn Féin, is saying, well, let's try to make it a year.
You could interpret it that way. You could say that in a way that the targets of the 9-week target and the 13-week target for diagnostics and treatment and stuff have to some extent fallen into abeyance, that the real pressure here is to sort out the thing on 52 weeks for outpatients and for 26 weeks for diagnostics.
And just to explain what an outpatient appointment is, so that is not getting treatment, that is not getting surgery. That is when you go to your doctor, the length of time between you going to your doctor, if the doctor have said, look, you need to see a specialist.
Yes, that's what it is. Normally people go to see their GP and their GP says, I would like to see you and for you to see an expert, and they make a referral for you to see that expert.
So when we've been waiting for this announcement from the new leader of Sinn Féin, Michelle O'Neill, for some months now, and what she's come forward with is not a plan to treat these people who have been waiting more than a year. Not a future plan to have them treated within 9 weeks. What type of impact does it have, John, on someone's health, potentially, if they're waiting a year rather than 9 weeks?
Well, it's very difficult for people who are waiting that length of time. You know, naturally, we're all anxious. If someone says you have to go and see a consultant, you worry a little bit about why you're being referred to see the consultant. You may have some pain or distress or upset in the middle of all. So it's not a comfortable place for anyone to be. And it's there and it's part of your life. And I don't think that anyone that I know in the system actually is content or happy that these numbers are anywhere near where they are at the minute.
In a past life, I would have been looking at some of the language really closely that you had endorsed. You see, now you're on the other side, you can tell me what you really think, which is this. We look at this document and we read that the department aims, key word, aims to reduce the 52-week waiting time. Is that a commitment?
It's not an absolute commitment. It's
why is the word aim put in there?
Because that's exactly what they know, that this is a moving target and it's a moving number. And so it's impossible to sort of give an absolute commitment. So it says,
so the department's given themselves wriggle room in that?
A little bit, yes. The intention is clearly that they will do it within a year. Yeah.
So I would aim to be 12 stone by next year, but it might not happen. Is
correct.
That close to what they're doing here?
Correct, yes. Well, I think I'm not going to comment on your weight loss,
yes,
or potential weight loss.
But look at that word.
Yeah, but I think it does give a bit of wriggle room, because obviously things can happen. Remember, in the rest of the document, which is actually quite positive in the sense of talking about reforming the system and how to reform the system to improve what we do in elective care, talks about the need to separate elective care from emergency care. And the aim is because everyone knows that from time to time, emergency pressures mean that elective things have to sit and have to wait a little bit, because the first call is on the emergency work.
This was the big announcement that we were waiting for from Michelle O'Neill. We've been waiting months for this now. So this was the big one. I didn't notice any number in there from the leader of Sinn Féin as to how much money the health service actually needs to function next year. How much extra money?
No, it's a very specific thing, isn't it? The paper is about waiting times per se. It's not about the total system. So it's one component part, if you like, of how the total system is going to be reformed. But the money in elective care is not separate from the pressures that the total system faces, and it does face about 6% pressures. That's a pretty well established fact year on year, and that's a consequence.
You say pretty well established. I was asking Pat Sheehan and he wasn't able to tell me.
Well, you know, sometimes people, maybe at interviews, are focused in a different way. All I know is that about 2% each year is for inflation, about 2% is for new treatments, and about 2% is the consequence of us getting an older population. So all of those things mean that the Northern Ireland system needs around about £300 million each year to continue to function, and part of that's elective care. Now, the 31...
And nowhere is that mentioned by Michelle O'Neill. And this 300 million, there's not one penny of that guaranteed at the moment.
No, because that would be part of the Northern Ireland budget, and that would be a major budget issue for the executive in the normal course of working. And because there is no budget and there is no executive, then it's very, very difficult. And I think that's the point where, isn't it, the Permanent Secretary David Stirling has already said it will be quite difficult for the health system, because the thing that you need is the ability to plan, and that's important.
So therefore, we have this, essentially this Sinn Féin announcement, 31 million to reduce these waiting lists for people who are already sitting, waiting a year or not, for the first outpatient appointment, right? But if we don't get this 300 million, if we don't get the 6% that is needed, and there's no notion whatsoever of getting it, unless there can be an agreement with an executive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what happens within the health service to waiting lists?
Well, the waiting list will grow. In fact, the document itself says that. If you look, there's a page where on page 26 of their own document, it says, talking about the 31 million in the 52 weeks, it says, it should be noted that this applies at a point in time and patients will continue to be added to waiting lists as long as demand exceeds capacity. Further additional investment will be necessary in subsequent years to sustain these improvements, and achieving this commitment will be subject to receiving the budget necessary to finance the actions in this plan. So, you know, this is about 31 million. It's to do a good thing. It's to say to the 10,000 people who are waiting over 52 weeks, we are going to get you seen. On the 10,000 people who are waiting for a diagnosis or for intervention, we're going to do something about that. But it also says quite clearly that actually, if we don't get a different budget sort of thing sorted out, then we could find ourselves right back in the same place.
Maybe what I've said there about they've no notion of getting this 300 million. I guess technically, the civil servant David Stirling could choose to give the health service 300 million. Could he not?
Well, yes, you're in quite...
And take it from other departments?
Well, of course, but you're in quite uncharted territory for that to occur. I mean, the rules are pretty clear, isn't it, that I think are well publicised. The civil servants have the ability to spend 75% on day one of the new year and going up to 95% by the mid-year point. And that's, of course, to stop any sort of stop-start thing in terms of public service. But ultimately, when you're planning to change, and this is all about transformation, that's what this most of this paper is about, the transformation, which is a good thing. You have to have something more than just an allocation of resource. You have to have a policy decision, a political decision, and the authority to make the change.
And without that, what's going to happen next year to people? You see, John, I'm very, very aware, and it's been part of some of my discussions with some of the more senior people within the health service recently. I'm very, very aware that while there is political disagreement and political talk shows, there are real people on the ground wondering what's going to happen to their illness and when they're going to be seen.
Well, the simple fact of the matter is the system will struggle. You know, in the absence of a proper budget, in the absence of proper budget and budget planning, the system will struggle.
It means
people will wait. It means that we will still have situations where we haven't changed how we deliver service in the way that we want to deliver service in Northern Ireland. And that will mean there'll be a problem about how people get seen, when they get seen, where they get seen, and all of that. I mean, that's just self-evident. You know, you cannot go through a transformation. And by the way, the Bengoa thing is a very good transformation, you know, direction of travel. And the disappointing thing, the really, really disappointing thing for many people that I've spoken to in the health system is that we don't actually have a government that's going to drive that. Let's hope after March we do, but, you know, right now we don't, and that's really disappointing.
And so, therefore, if after March there is a long, protracted period of time, which is very much, according to some on the cards, a long period of time before that executive will get up and going again, what do you think that delay will mean for people in Northern Ireland?
Well,
in terms of the health service,
I think there's this very simple choice, isn't there? The health system will have to break even with whatever resource it's got. So you have a choice. You break even. If you break even, you queue. That's the truth of the matter. You know, the choice is you either break even or you queue for service, and people will queue for service, not just in hospital services, they'll queue for other services. And if you don't actually have a strategic direction and a proper policy and a proper, if you like, political leadership driving those changes through, then that's the inevitability.
Are you worried?
I would be concerned. You know, I genuinely am concerned about where the health service and health system finds itself. It's full of fantastic people who work really, really hard to do a great job. And I think they need a little bit better than currently what's happening.
I'm asking you random questions here that come in my head because there's so much in this. It's just struck me that this policy of trying to find the 31 million to reduce those people who are waiting a year or more. Mm-hmm. Could you not question that as a policy in itself, in that some people who are waiting a year or more might not be in the most serious situations, might not be in a life-threatening situation? So is there not at least a school of thought for discussion that 31 million should be thrown at people who are in life-threatening situations, who may be waiting 16 weeks
well,
or 18
system,
weeks?
The system does try to do that already. I mean, the system does have what's called a red flag system, where if you go see your GP and your GP thinks that you have something very significantly wrong with you, you will get what's called a red flag referral, and that will go up, and you are likely to be seen much more quickly as a consequence of that. But
you get the thrust of what I'm saying
here.
Oh,
I do get the thrust of what you're saying.
This is down to a time period rather than the degree of your illness.
Of course it is.
Is that right?
Well, I think, you know, all referrals and all conditions that are seen, you know, very few people go to hospital to be seen because there's nothing wrong with them. They go to hospital because there is something wrong with them. Whether or not it is life-threatening, I think, is what you're really talking about, as opposed to...
Well, life-threatening is maybe the wrong term. Serious... against mildly serious. Could you have a situation here now in Northern Ireland where tens of millions of pounds are being thrown at some people who have a mild illness that needs surgery compared to someone who has a serious illness who's waiting 6 months rather than a year.
But the whole point about this, Stephen, is that it points that this is just a solution to one component of the waiting list time. There are 168,000 people waiting for outpatient appointments over 9 weeks. That's about
168,000.
According to the department's own figures in the report, about 70% of the people who are referred. So there's a great, if you like, bag of all sorts of problems in that number, and the scale is huge. What this is about doing is saying, at the very worst end, we have allowed a situation to be created where we have nearly 40,000 people waiting over a year, and really we have to sort that out. It isn't a solution to waiting lists. The solution to waiting lists is described in the document in terms of the strategic reform, better arrangements with general practitioners, better arrangements with elective care centres, all of the things which are good things in the document. But they require, if you like, a government to be in place. They require a proper budget to be in place to enable those to occur. Otherwise, they're just aspirational.
What, when you look at that 40,000 figure, and let's remember that's September, so with winter pressures, John, it's likely to be up, right?
I would be surprised if it doesn't grow over the winter period. And in other words, that by the end of March, when you're actually doing it, the 40,000 isn't a bit bigger than 40,000. I would be very surprised.
When you look at that figure, 40,000 waiting over a year for an outpatient appointment, are you shocked?
Yes, I am genuinely shocked about it. I think the scale of it is really quite extraordinary. I don't think that anybody can be other than shocked about it. It's just an extraordinary set of circumstances that we have permitted our health system to get to that sort of stage. You know, this doesn't happen overnight. This happens over a period of years. It doesn't happen overnight. And there has been a marked change, really, in the last 3 to 4 years in terms of the numbers of people waiting.
Without an executive and without full ministerial budget, what are you saying will happen to waiting lists?
I suspect they'll grow. I suspect they'll remain pretty much static. The document itself talks about what they talk about is demand and capacity. In other words, in an even world, what can the system actually deal with? And how many people can the system deal with? And it says, I think, in the document about 60, that, you know, the number of people wanting to use the system is about 68,000 greater than the system can deal with. Well, clearly, if you don't reform the system, the 68,000 aren't going to go away. They're going to spill into the waiting times, and the waiting times are going to get worse.
A final question, given where we're at, what do you hope happens?
My biggest hope for Northern Ireland, apart from the health service, is that we get a government back. It's, you know, I perhaps more than most people understand how important it is to have a local executive taking those decisions.
But waiting lists were going up even when we had the government. Let's remind ourselves of that.
To be fair
to Michelle O'Neill, they were going up with her predecessor. And there's a long-term problem.
But the point about it is the government needs to take the leadership in reforming the system. And that reform urgently needs to take place. It's the absence of reform that is going to break the health and social care system, if you want to use that language. And reform can only really take place if you have a proper functioning government and a very aggressive and detailed debate about budgets. I mean, you know, the health system will always say it needs more money and other people will challenge it, but it does need more resource. And those things are absolutely central to creating a modern system that we all want to use.
John, thanks for coming in this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.